we will go through the representations. You will try for them. SARS does it very well. They actually usually do a table. They say, this is what you recommended, and this is our response. So I don't know if we have such a table from national. I did speak to you yesterday, DDG. Okay, but I hand over to you. It's now 11 minutes past. So 15 minutes or so on this, and 20 minutes on replying to a specific question. Is that okay? Good. Thank you very much. Before we forget, there is one practical matter. Before we close at 10 past 1, 5 past 1, we should just look at the resolution we took on processing of bills. I want to suggest an amendment because I've been discussing with the committee section and so on about what happened last week. And all the indications are there was no reason why we shouldn't have voted. It was, it was presented to the committee the day before. But there are capacity issues and so on, and I'm working with the committee section and with the chief whip of the ANC on this matter. So I will come back to that at 5 past 1. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. Maybe just to repeat the apology for our brand new out-of-the-box DG. We were hoping to show him off today here, you know, and also to demonstrate how quick a recruitment process can be. Very efficient, so that also happens in government. And Chairperson, today I am accompanied by our Chief Financial Officer who will take us through the financials since that is her forte. And then on my right, it is our Head of Strategy and Planning who will take us through the performance information statistics. Of course, if you have rightly pointed, Chairperson, there was a report dated 17 May 2017 with recommendations from the committee. We have responded to that in writing. The report is now being circulated to all members. We will take questions on it if there are any questions of clarity. But since we have only 15 minutes to go through the report, I will hand over to the CFO to take us through the financial information.
Thanks. Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Silindile Kubheka. I'm presenting the fourth quarter of the National Treasury of our expenditure. The first one is just an overview comparing this year to last year. As you will see that the major issue was on, actually it's not a major issue. The major difference will be on transfers, which we reduced due to a budget cut. So this year we spent about 93% of that, which is on transfers. If I can move to the next slide. So on the next slide, basically, it just outlines what we spent per program between different programs from 1 to 10, and 9 and 10 majorly just being direct transfers. As you can see that the National Treasury spent 99% of its budget in the year under review on the fourth quarter, which is the year to date, and the savings or the underspending, which obviously comprises of savings as well of 253 million consolidated. The next slide, from the next five slides, basically outline the major variances where the 253 came from, one being on transfers that were made from different programs, and the other one being 100 million that was on the operational budget. The major ones on the underspending on transfers was the surplus that was given to the jobs fund, and those were not used as spent because they didn't meet certain criteria, so the jobs fund obviously had to return that money to the treasury. The next one is on the neighborhood development grants, also because of some of the municipalities that did not spend their money, and that was transferred in November. The continuation of the slides are basically still, there's one on the special pensions, that is main members are opting for the NSF, the non-statutory forces, and by the nature of the account, it will always have variances simply because people will die and as a result, obviously, they don't use everything that has been allocated. Also, one of those transfers that were the underspending was also on the injuries on duties based on some of the employers not returning the awards certificates on time. The others were just on various transfers of about 2.8. The next remaining slides are focusing on National Treasury's operations budget. The under savings one were also based on the positions that were frozen due to ensuring that we met the ceiling that was declared by the Minister of Finance, the then Minister of Finance. So we saved from that because we had to freeze certain posts, and now posts are only advertised based on the recruitment committee that would approve them upfront. Looking at also the underspending on the operational budget of the Jobs Fund, as the Jobs Fund obviously is managed by through the GTEC, they would submit their invoices that we have to process. So as you can see, that there was an underspending of 14.3. The next slides are focusing also on the operational budget being the surplus that was on the Neighborhood Development Grant, the indirect grant, which is the operations, also on the transversal systems, which includes the legacy systems, your BEST, the LOGIS, and PESA. Also, the last one, also on the special audit services from the OEG. The remaining ones, the 5.5 was we had planned to procure because now and again we will experience power shortages to procure a generator, but the process did not happen as fast as we thought because of the complications of getting a generator. Also, the last one were based on our own efficiencies in terms of cost containment measures that were implemented through the department, one being how we procure stationery, improvising on training and making sure that we conduct on-the-job training and in-house training as opposed to external training, as well as reducing on our travel costs. The next slide focuses on the classification per budget, basically just outlines the breakdown of what was the percentage spent per economic classification. As you will see that on our compensation, we spent about 96%, as well as on goods and services. And on payments of financial assets, we transferred almost everything that was allocated. So that will include also where we buy shares from various institutions, including the New Development Bank and the African Development Bank. And in terms of the transfers that we transferred to various programs, the 152, as I've already explained above, resulted as a variance from that. The next slide just focuses basically on comparing what we have been given in terms of our adjusted estimates, budget, and as well as the actual. And below you would see the variances in terms of the spending. The overall, as I've said, the National Treasury had spent 99% of its budget. Lastly, we'll focus on the environments that happened. So this is where we were allocating for the under-allocated programs. Program 5 had to be allocated 35 million. That was mainly a transfer to the Auditor General because of the 1% audit fee that we transferred to them. And it's mainly because of the municipalities and some of the entities that qualify in terms of the PAA Act that could not meet their audit fee obligations. And those were taken from the savings on various programs as have been listed on the slide. Thank you, Chair.
So this is our reporting is year to date. You will see in the first slide our our quarter four performance report, we achieved 75.61% of our total indicators for quarter four. We underperformed on 14.02 and we did not achieve 10.37%. Reminding the committee that the difference between under not achieving and partially achieving is below 50% and 50% to 99%. In terms of actual numbers, you will see that between quarter one to quarter four, we have increased our achieved total percentage. Our partially achieved is equally decreased. The area that National Treasury is focusing on this financial year in particular is the percentage of not achieved quarter to quarter. We are implementing new processes to ensure that we have more stringent progress reports for those targets that are annual targets only, i.e. we report them at the end of the year to ensure that we don't have an increase between quarter three and quarter four in terms of performance. The next slide indicates our achievement by program. I'm sure the committee has focused on those programs that we have achieved a significant number of indicators, which includes program 1, 2, 3, 4. Challenges, of course, have been in program 5, which includes the OAG and OCPO, and program 6 in particular, which is the international financial relations. In general, the reasons for poor performance in terms of the OAG is their heavy reliance on third-party or user participation in a number of their programs. And those third parties and users, i.e. in many respects municipalities, have been negatively affected by their own operating environment or having to respond to cost containment. And that then has had a negative impact on the delivery of programs within that area. In terms of the OCPO, much of their underperformance is in respect of realigning their five-year intended plan to the realization of actual implementation and having to then realign the scheduling of some of those deliveries. Program 6, much of the performance there relies on third parties, particularly in terms of SADC and other organizations in Africa. We've also given you the actual number of targets in terms of achieved, partially achieved, and not achieved. And then for the committee, we've actually indicated each of our indicators by program, by indicator, the target, the actual, and the reasons for not achieving. I do want to confirm to the committee that for all of the indicators that we have underperformed, we have an action plan, and if required, we can actually give the committee an understanding of what those action plans are to address the poor and underperformance. So if the committee, in the question time, if there's any particular indicators that the committee would like us to look at in terms of underperformance, we've also given the committee a sense of our highlights, and those mainly are in terms of our focus on training. And we believe that training is a critical part of addressing improved financial management, governance, and the effect of the PFMA, MFMA, and integrating it and strengthening it in across government. And I'll end the DDG.
So, Chairperson, the third part of the presentation is the responses to the budget vote 7 recommendations by the committee. As I have alluded to, and maybe a bit unfair to the committee, but we do apologize to only have distributed this morning. I mean, ideally, we should give the honorable members enough opportunity to go through our responses and ask for questions of clarity. I'm not sure, Chair, how you want us to go through this it is presented, tabled in writing, but obviously, as I said, only distributed this morning. Should we go page by page, or we give the honorable members an opportunity to seek clarity where our responses are not very clear? I'll take the guidance from you, Chair.
Well, as we've done it before, you don't take us literally to every line. You just say point one, and then you give us an overview. But if members want to read it quickly, and so on, I'm guided by the majority. Until now, we've done it the way I've said. Shall we just do it like that? Yeah, just give us an overview of the point.
Okay.
Look, to be fair to the DDG, I think you were only told on Friday that you have to be here, right? And there's a change of guard, so we have to be a bit sympathetic. So I think we understand. Thank you.
I can take the blows, Chair.
No, there's no blows. I'm being sympathetic. Empathetic.
I am surrounded by my two colleagues here who will ably assist me because they are part of the EXCO. And maybe it is refreshing to note that our ESCO is starting to address the gender issues. So we do have females, number of females increasing in our ESCO. So the first point, the committee requested to know how the minister is going to address the downgrades going forward. I'm sure you have noted the press conference that was held last week at the GCIS, where the minister and the DG and the head of economic policy were addressing the media in terms of areas of engagement. I mean, the one area that is very clear is that we need to work together with the private sector, with organized labor. We have reinvigorated this engagement with big business unity South Africa, business, Black Business Council, the Black Management Forum. So we are very aware that in order to grow the economy, to transform the economy, we need to engage deeply with these role players. The other area was that the committee believes the government, business and labor need to work as far more. Actually, these two talk to each other. I'll go to number three. Contingent liabilities, as we explained the other time, at the Treasury we have a financial liability committee that is made up of DDGs in the National Treasury, headed by the DDG ALM. That is the committee that sits whenever there is a request for a state guarantee. So they do all the technical work, and then they advise the minister. So it becomes the minister's prerogative to award. And that area is very clear. There is no area where where he can delegate that responsibility. But at least the decision is made on a technical analysis by the experts in that area. We have the report. It is quite a huge report. Maybe in future, or we should just make the committee aware or the committee secretary where that report can be accessed, so that at every quarter you can see the contingent liability of the government as a result of the guarantees. So that report is there, it's available, it's under the DDG ALM, if you need the details. And I'm sure the last time we were with the then DG, I think he elaborated extensively how the FLC operates. So I'm not going to spoil his explanation that time. I will go to number six, the mandatory rotation of auditors. This also was in the news when the minister and the CEO of the Independent Regulatory Board on Auditors made a statement in terms of this rotation of auditors. Treasury is aware, we acknowledge that this is a very complex area. We need to balance between transforming the audit profession. We know we always hear about the Big Four, being dominant players, having contracts running over 100 years. But obviously what we need to do should not come with unintended consequences. So we are trading very carefully, still engaging with the profession, the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants, the IRBA, to a point where we can make a conclusion that would be beneficial to the country. So that is an ongoing process, and that's also what the committee requested, that we handle this matter with care. You will add the others where I have missed. The revised preferential procurement regulations number 7, we got a request from the CPO that the first quarter reporting of this financial year, they would like to come and brief the committee in terms of detailed implementation or revision of this preferential procurement regulations. So we're hoping when we come back in the next quarter, they will be accompanying us so that they brief the committee in detail. Number 8, it talks to treasuries ensuring that departments adhere to regulations in so far as 30 days payment is concerned. There is a very comprehensive analysis there in terms of which departments, which provinces are not adhering to this. And we have also differentiated between the role of treasuries, OCPO, and the role of the DPME. But of course, at the end of the day, we are one government. We want to ensure that a payment does take place within 30 days as stipulated. And you would see there are reasons where that is not taking place. We differentiate between those that come to Treasury's attention and those that goes to the DPME's attention. So all the remaining pages talk to that issue of a 30-day payment. You can see there is an extensive analysis by the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer there with amounts and all the variances. There was also a question regarding filling critical positions under the Treasury. The DG1 we have already alluded to, it's done. The Chief Procurement Officer, we have shortlisted candidates. We just need a date and time to go through the interview. So it is at a very advanced stage. The CEO of SAA, also Minister, has received 3 possible candidates. And obviously there is an engagement between the Minister and the Board to answer some of the outstanding information, and thereafter the process will be taken to Cabinet. I have skipped others that I think were repeating or they are talking to one another in different questions. But my colleagues here, if they think there's one or two that I have missed, you are welcome to do so.
Of the committee that we were requested to indicate is in terms of the question on transformation of the financial sector, the NT's response of NT to the recommendations of the report on the transformation of the financial sector, and we've indicated in our responses that we commit to regular feedback as and when required, but we are currently working on a financial sector summit, which will bring together all the stakeholders to reinvigorate this charter. And it's our understanding that National Treasury has already started meeting with key stakeholders in the sector, and the process is continuing at an accelerated rate.
Over to members. David had his hand up. Mr. Mania, Pinky, Alf, who else? Derek, Floyd. Okay.
Thank you, Christian. Thank you, Chairperson. I have a question and a comment. In your response, I wonder if you could explain how the mining charter will fast-track investment and economic growth. The consensus position is it will do exactly the opposite. I wonder if you could explain why that position is incorrect. Second, Chair, and I think this is more a comment. I've said before, and I'll say it again, I think in this quarterly reporting, the truth of the matter is we're simply going through the motions. What I would expect, and maybe the committee should meet and set out their expectations, what I would expect, for example, is a detailed update on every single review being conducted by the CPO. I would expect a detailed update on every single performance and expenditure review being conducted by GTAC. I would expect a detailed update on contingent liabilities, the current position, new contingent liabilities being applied for, exactly where they are in the system, when the FLC last met, when their next meeting, etc. And I would expect a detailed update on compliance with cost containment measures. Every single department, are they complying? Aren't they complying? Who applied for deviations? What was the nature of those deviations? Frankly, unless we...
On cost containment, we've discussed this matter. That's not... Don't answer it. That's being dealt with by the Appropriations Committee. So can you deal with that matter? We're not going to allow you, David. Sure. For 2 years, how long have you been here? A year and a half. You just got to actually respect other committees' portfolio. And
look,
that's not a question you're going to answer. But they dealt with it already.
But my broader point is about how we deal with the quarterly report. Because frankly, this is going through the motions.
Okay.
It's a waste of time.
Okay. Who's next? Well, it was Pinky.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I thought when the CFO was also presenting, or the DDG maybe, because he's given the responsibility to lead the team. This is an opportunity also just for the department to also take us in confidence on the issue of the IFMS, which has been all over the show, so that you put the record straight without us relying on sources that may not help us in a way. So I had thought you would also use this opportunity, CFO, just to take us in confidence, because it's in your programs. It's one of the things that is ongoing on your programs, and maybe it was also important for us to do that. The other issue, Chair, when the unit that deals with strategy was also presenting, I thought, I'll be subject to correction. As you deal with some of the things, you are also able to show us how systematically you are able to respond to the AG's issues, so that because every year, whether you get a clean audit or whatever adverse, but there may be a way of planning for the next Auditor General's cycle. So you are even able to take us in confidence as a department to say, from the strategic point of view, these were some of the things that the AG normally looks at, and this is how we are systematically answering and dealing with those things to keep recurrence, but also to make sure that going forward, these are some of the things that we are able to deal with. The other issue, Chair, which I really appreciate from Treasury, how you have responded on and given a breakdown on how the outstanding payments look like, especially from the Office of the Chief Financial Officer. But what is not coming out clear is whether
those payments that have not been honored, are these accruals or what does it mean? Are they waiting for the new financial year to pay these people, or it's just a delay because of the human element, so that we know whether there's poor planning by departments and that suppliers are taking a knock because of things of our own making and so on and so on. The last issue, Chair, and maybe I might not have gone through all the responses. Treasury remembers that we had this issue of comprehensive social security, what, where yourselves and the Department of Social Development and so on must look comprehensively, but the department must come, not yourselves, in liaison with yourself. The Department of Social Development must bring that act. It's something very outstanding, but it's something very critical because we can't move on certain things. And once it moves out of your program here, because it has been a ticking time bomb for some time, my wish is that let it be on the radar so that you are able to give us feedback from time to time. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. Again, the IFMS thing is obviously important. You can reply briefly, but it's being addressed by the Appropriations Committee. As I recall it, two Fridays ago, the specific focus was on that. So I don't think we should cover the same ground, but you can reply briefly. Jenkins should help us. Some issues fall under appropriation, some fall under finance, and we have to respect it because it's legislated in the Money Bills Act, and maybe members need to know that. But you can reply briefly, but that's also been covered two Fridays ago. There were media reports on that. Okay, next member, please. Who is next? Yes, Eric, I think. Mr. Lees, yeah. Yeah, whatever, yeah.
Well, thanks. Are we dealing with both the quarterly expenditure and the responses?
Yeah.
Okay. On the quarterly performance and reporting, firstly, I just want to disagree very strongly. This is not a waste of time. I mean, this is reporting that we have to deal with every quarter, and it's not a waste of time. Secondly, just a general comment, I think the performance generally is very good, and I think we need to acknowledge that. I also think your choice of words sometimes, and I think it's just the kind of format that we're dealing with. You know, partially achieved, not achieved, etc. Not achieved could mean poor performance, but it doesn't necessarily mean poor performance. You should really, I think one should just confine oneself to saying, these were the targets we set. We didn't achieve them, so it would go down as partially achieved or not achieved, but these were the reasons. They could be poor performance reasons, but you can set a target, you know, to run a 10-second 100 meters, and then you face a strong headwind and you do it in 12 seconds. It's not poor performance. You know, there were objective realities that prevented you from reaching your targets. I think we shouldn't just assume because a target wasn't reached that it was poor performance. But each one should be reported on. That's not a waste of time. So overall, I think the it looks good, the fourth quarter expenditure and performance reporting. And clearly, we don't have enough time to go through each one of them. Because I think if there are little alarm bells, if we had enough time, you would say, well, why is it in this particular area, in this area? I think, Eunice, you know, from when you were a minister, you would spend 3 or 4 hours with the department, and they would go systematically through each one of them. On the responses to the observations and recommendations arising from the report of, I think, the budget vote dated 17th of May, I think, Chairperson, I think to have received this in advance and studied this more carefully and then comment on it would have been more useful. I think it's a bit difficult to now say whether we believe that the responses are adequate because we need to study them. But I would go just having scanned it and listened to it. If I go to recommendation one, The committee requires Treasury to brief it on how exactly the minister is going to address the downgrades. You know, I think the first thing is the downgrades are serious. And so the analysis of what resulted in the downgrades need to be serious. And I, the very first paragraph here, the minister noted that the recent downgrades were driven by low growth reflecting policy uncertainty, weakening of South Africa's institutional strengths, and weakening governance and financial positions of state-owned companies, and rising exposure to contingent liabilities. There were the three factors that were noted by the minister. You know, Eunice, I just think this is hopelessly inadequate, because, you know, it's public knowledge. We all know that the downgrade followed what was an act of removing the former minister, and they followed very rapidly. And because, and especially that the, I know you feel uncomfortable about it, but that's what happened. And especially when the reasons given for the removal of the former minister were so unconvincing, and in fact based on what was obviously a false intelligence report. So that gave rise to huge concern. So I don't believe that this is an accurate analysis. Because before you address the problem, you need to understand the problem and analyze the problem so that you're able to address it. Now, that's not something that you can address, the fact that your former minister was arbitrarily removed. You can't. But that's what happened. And then, if you then say, but low growth reflecting policy uncertainty, I would want to know, but why is there policy uncertainty? What policy uncertainty? What are you doing or what are we doing? It can't be you alone. That's your analysis or the minister's analysis. But what is Cabinet doing? And obviously the Minister of Finance is part of Cabinet. What is Cabinet doing? Obviously, in close consultation with the governing party, because all Cabinet ministers belong to the governing party, to address these policy uncertainties. Where is the policy uncertainty? Who's creating the policy uncertainty? What are you doing to address the policy uncertainties? Weakening of institutional strengths. Equally, Eunice, we need to then analyze why are our institutions as weak as they are? You know, what's the origin? And you know, there's so much has been written about it. But we need to know, not wanting to paraphrase the public protector's terminology, but we need to know why are the institutions not as strong as they should be? Why are they weak, and what's the remedial action? And if the boards are a problem, well, you know, it's very much within the power of Cabinet to determine who gets appointed on boards. If boards aren't performing, the question one would want to know is, you know, but what are you doing about underperforming boards? Now, I know it goes beyond the role of the Finance Committee. I'm asking these questions because this is the response that we get in response to the question. I could go on for longer, but I won't. Under the various interventions, I see you've got interventions to address governance and financial weaknesses of SOCs. I just think you need a much more serious analysis there, and I know you don't have enough room, or you know, this is a summarized report, but we need to know what is actually being done. I'm repeating myself on that. On the point two, you say that, you know, the committee believes that government, business, and labor needs to work, you paraphrase what the committee said, that government, business, and labor needs to work more effectively together and requires NT to brief it at its quarterly meeting. Could you just, and I'm going to stop here. Some of us met with the banking associations a couple of weeks ago, and if you could just give us some kind of reassurance that the CEO initiative, which is mentioned here, is the CEO initiative, which was a really a wonderful initiative, which started at the beginning of this year, initiated by the president himself, driven by the Minister of Finance. I was then, you know, in Cabinet as well, and it touched on sectors like tourism, and it was groundbreaking in many respects. Is the CEO initiative, is it still up and running? Yeah, I'll stop there, Eunice. Thank you.
Yeah, but you don't have to be intimidated. Tandi's not here. So, really, Tandi's here for the measure. May I take this opportunity to say that Tandi is sick and therefore not here? Okay, Mr. Ali.
Mr. Chairman. Okay, thanks very much for the presentation.
You mentioned that the contingent liabilities are available online every quarter, and so I think that's great. If we could just get some guidance as to how to get to it. But if I may just drill down a little bit on contingent liabilities, because you, I'm sure, are aware of the SAA issues that are in the media at the moment in terms of lenders to SAA not being too keen to roll over or renew loans. Have SAA applied to National Treasury for any kind of financial assistance or bailout? And when and what amount, if so, are they looking for? Because that has an impact on their contingents and liabilities. Then I really think it's fantastic that Donda has been appointed so quickly. I really think that's helped with markets and all sorts of things. So well done. I won't make the kind of suspicious comment that the chair made about
that. That was a facetious remark. I probably meant congratulations.
It was a joke. I have the same sense of humour, Mr. Chairman. I hope everyone understood that was a joke. But nevertheless, it really is disappointing that the Chief Procurement Officer position, some 6 months later, still is vacant, and you say some candidates have now been shortlisted. You don't tell us who they are. Presumably you shouldn't do that, but at least tell us when the interviews are taking place, when this appointment will take place. It's a critical, critical position. And
you're not suspicious.
No, me, Mr. Chairman, never. I don't generally ignore the chair. I'm a very disciplined member of this committee, Mr. Chairman. I think perhaps Derek is right. We should always ignore you. And then even worse in a way is SAA, where we haven't had a CEO for 2 years or more, and now we're told there are three possible candidates, and yet a couple of months ago, we were assured by the then minister that by March the appointment would be done. And now in June, 3 months later, we still don't have an appointment. We don't know when the appointment. You're not telling us. There's a problem with the chair of that board, but let that be. So we really do need some reassurance that that's going to be dealt with. I think I've got SARS, I think, are the rest. Thank you, Mr.
Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I see in the responses that National Treasury says that I know tomorrow I'm going to deal with the mandatory audit firm rotation. And in the responses, you say that this is a complex issue that requires ongoing discussions and consultations. But the minister said that he supports a mandatory audit firm rotation. What is the position of National Treasury on that, so that there's clarity? Are we consulting further or you support it? There must be clarity on where National Treasury stands, so that we're able to frame our discussions clearly. But also you say that you're going to convene a financial sector summit. But we have been busy discussing financial sector transformation, the wider process of finalizing the recommendations and resolutions. What becomes our role? It's just a TV talk show where we just note what we have said without any consequences. If you're going to have another summit, which you say is going to reinvigorate the charter and everything else, because there are so many things that there's too much ground that has been covered already in, with regards to that. I see you note as part of the transformation issues, you note the mining charter. What is the position of National Treasury on the recently gazetted mining charter? And the other issue is, I think much more concretely, when is Dudumieni leaving SAA? I think there was a hint on that, because well, she has left, she has missed so many meetings, well, and we heard that she's supposed to leave, but when is she leaving? Like, are you aware, because National Treasury has been given the mandate to oversee the South African Airways in terms of all of those issues. And yesterday, the public protector issued the remedial action that changes the mandate of the Reserve Bank. And the Reserve Bank today said that it's going to make an urgent court application to set aside the remedial action that changes the mandate of the Reserve Bank. Again, as a minister, well, as a department that oversees the Reserve Bank, what is your attitude on the remedial action that was provided by the public protector changing the constitution, saying that the constitution must be changed? Of course, there are legalities around that, whether the public protector can single-handedly change the constitution and all of those things. Are you going to join the Reserve Bank, or are you going to join the public protector to change the mandate of the Reserve Bank? Thank you.
Okay, anybody else?
No. Okay, just a few quick things. One is, oh, last minute. But let me start with the response to Mr. Mania. I think it's very sweeping, the statement he's making. And I'm not going to cover this ground, it's the last time. Prior to this term, from what I know from the secretaries, we've never had quarterly reports in this committee because of the huge legislative load and other oversight. So we started it in July 2014. And I think, Treasury, you've got progressively better. But partly, the committee must put more pointed questions. And as usual, the recommendations, members are asked to send recommendations, and very rarely does anybody. Sometimes the DA does, and sometimes the DA wants to take over the role of all the committees, and we can't allow that. So, you know, part of the problem is us, and we never get the time to look at how we're functioning. Personally, I'm not convinced we need more hours. I think we'd be far more productive, and with ICT, you know, there are many things we can do outside of committees. And this is a difficult period. Not only is the majority party having all its conferences, but the elections are looming, and everybody's in election mode. So let's be realistic, right? Up to April 2019, we're going to be in that mode. It's not that. It actually must look at some of the things. You guys keep doing it. Even now, David knows we've covered the ground. He keeps trying to. I'm just going to rule it out. That's what a chair is supposed to do. Going to change the Money Bills Act or change the rules of Parliament. But we are not a super committee, and we cannot take over the role of other committees. Every time the DA raises things, I'm not going to do this anymore. It's not my job. I'm just going to say no. I go to the chairs of those committees. I phone them. I email them. I look for them in the House and tell them, can you take up this issue? And they say yes. So the DA must sort its own internal structures out. You have members in those committees and I've raised it there. So basically what I want to say is that what I do accept is that your answers are not adequate, really. And you hurt yourself by your own petard. You're a very good department. I have my own personal, not as a chair of this committee, ideological issues with the Treasury. But the technical quality, I want to say this again. Somebody pointed out to me last week, I'm probably the most experienced chair of committees in this parliament. I've served as a committee chair since 98 and five committees. I also served on the other side. And you are by far the best department I have ever come across, by far. So, you know, you can do better. And almost everything, in fact, everything Derek Arnicum said, I agree with. I disagree with some of the emphasis. Where, you know, I think he's right to say that if you haven't achieved your target, it may be because of circumstances beyond your control, and he uses a very nice thing, and I think he's right. But
I really think your answers are not adequate. You know, most of them, really. Let me just go through them quickly. Right? The first one, I think Derek covered very well. Now, let's move at the thing that is correct, this contingent liabilities thing. So you're telling us it's available. So between Sam Mandiwana and Alan and Devo, you must sort it out. If it's cheaper to just access it via the internet, give the connection to people. Parliament pays for our stuff, right? Is it a very long document, DDG, the contingent liability? Is it like many pages? About how many pages? About more than 100?
Yeah.
All right, so I'll leave it to the parliamentary committee secretaries to look into it. We may have to print it, we may not have to print it, right? But I think it must be sent to people, preferably a week before. Because otherwise, you know, if anybody else wants to access our service, I would be free to do it. So I think the answer to contingent liabilities is very inadequate. In fact, most of the answers, quite frankly, you know, with due respect to you, except the inane responses you require to do by the inane recommendations, they are observations more than recommendations. So on the issue of the financial sector summit, we have already indicated that we're not happy about the fact that the summit is not taking place this year. The Minister of Finance announced it in February. Off Floyd's listening, we've recovered this ground, but I understand, you know, in his case, he's a whip and it's a small party, so I'm covered. But I'm not going to cover this for the DA, for example, or for the ANC. We discussed this matter. We communicated already that actually we are not happy about the Financial Sector Summit not taking place this year. We have indicated to you already that since you cannot have it this year for the reasons you've already spelled out, some of which we agree with, some of which we don't, you must announce when it is that you're having the summit this year. So we have said we understand because you're so caught up with the budget, you can't do it, say, before the third week of February. But we have suggested a date. By the middle of March next year it must be held, it's already announced. Secondly, to inform members who can't come to meetings, not those who don't come to meetings, the National Department of Trade and Industry has already confirmed that it's done a draft, right, a new draft of some of the work that they want to insert into the NEDLAC process. Thirdly, to respond to Floyd, we have said in processing the financial sector transformation summit issues that actually what you have to do is take into account the report we're going to insert. So we're going to insert our report into that process in NEDLAC, right? And then once you have finalized matters, we will want you to come to account to Parliament on what came out of the summit and to what extent you agreed or disagreed and why with the recommendations we have made. About finalizing that report, we've agreed on the deadlines, right? More or less, third week, end of August, early September. But I want to talk about that, having spoken to Zakela yesterday. Then on the issue of the mandatory rotation, it is surprising how you respond. I agree with Floyd. The minister's come out for it. Let me once again repeat, the majority of this committee is very clear. This thing is outrageous, okay, that four companies occupy such a high percentage of the market. However, not all of us, even within the same parties, fully understand, not that we're not agreeing, how MAFR is going to contribute towards transformation. Secondly, how it might actually undermine it. We're not talking about the big players saying it. We as politicians have this thing. What we had hoped for, and we'll finalize our positions tomorrow and we'll vote on it next week, was that there will be some discussion, further discussion, and a delay of implementation. But there has to be some sort of agreement of MAFR in some form or another. Then the next issue is, you're being asked about the mining charter. Now, I know what you're going to say. Your deputy minister and minister are not here. And to some extent, I as a chair have to protect you, right, because these are policy issues. But on the other hand, don't use that as an excuse. You might want to throw out your tentative observations as technical experts on the issue. Then on the 30-day thing, can I plead? You know, Treasury does what it can, but it cannot be held to account for the fact that other departments at the national and provincial level and local government don't deliver on this. So we must focus on Treasury's role. Is it that it can do more and is not doing it? I don't think it's fair. Some of the questions being posed, I just feel are not fair to Treasury because they involve government as a whole. Then on the issue of the improvement of the quarterly report, I think people should just send me some bullet points on it, and maybe between Zakiel, Antonio, and the committee, we build up a grid or a matrix, or I don't know how we, what's the word, Zakiel, that we can give them as a guide. On the issues that Pinky raised, as far as I know, that process is NEDLAC, right? The Provident Fund matter. And she's right to alert us to this, that the two-year cycle, the two-year provision in the Act will lapse, if I'm correct, at the beginning of the financial year next year. So we're running out of time. Finally, can I raise something about members thinking about this? I don't know how to put it. I'm putting it very crudely. I think a lot is about finding the right balances, right? So it's something we'll need to address tomorrow and next week when we look at what we do about the finances sector summit. That at the moment we've got two ground downgrades. Another one is looming. We've got a recession. We've got disinvestment strike, if you want to call it that. We've got mandatory audit rotation. We've got, this issue about public protector saying what she did yesterday, and so on. Now, even the most rabid Marxist, right, let alone National Democrat or liberal, we'll leave the liberals out particularly, but I mean, let's look at the parlance of the majority party and the spectrum of the majority party in its alliance. We'll accept that there's a thing like balance of power. There's things like concrete conditions. And you have to find the right balances. In other words, there are things you want to do, but you have to find the right timing. So I will ask members to think these things through. If you put too much on, too soon, not in the right conditions, when you don't have the mass base and the broader balance of power in your favor, you could end up disadvantaging the very poor and working class and underclass constituencies that you represent. That is all I'm saying. So I'm pleading with members to find the right balance, phase things in. So it comes back to this also about the MAFR and transformation. We're not opposed to the MAFR. We're not not altogether convinced the majority of how it fits in. But more importantly, we need to get a buy-in also from the big players. And that's the point I think the majority of us are making, not all of us. And within the ANC, I know there isn't a common position on that. So I'm just telling you what I think is the majority position within the majority party, though there's a significant minority that disagrees, and so they should. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe let me start with the issue that, Chair, you say belongs to other committees so that it is out of the way, the IFMS. As you rightly point out, Chair, we did do our presentation to the Appropriations Committee. We also did it to the Standing Committee on Public Service and Administration. But just so that this thing is out of the way, there is an amount of 4.3 billion rand that is bandied around. So the context of that is that when we submitted to Cabinet, and it is a known document, we submitted to Cabinet a memorandum on IFMS2, meaning continuing with IFMS from Bespoke, which is developing it ourselves, to off the shelf, so that it is easier to have one system that will integrate all systems. So the 4.3 billion rand is an amount that we inform Cabinet to say from IFMS1 to IFMS2 until roll out to departments and provinces, we will spend 4.3 billion rand. So that amount in the news is bandied around as a money, unappropriated money, funds. We don't know. So that is where the 4.3, so that it is in clear context. How do we find ourselves in the news with IFMS is that as part of a governance for any project with a big funding, obviously you need a risk management and audit committee to make sure that as we move into implementing this. There are controls in place. So we have an internal audit function like any other department, and they audited IFMS payment for a specific period and found that there were some lack of controls. But obviously, being a management internal document, management was made aware of the lack of controls, and then implementation started to be in place to ensure that those gaps are closed. Now that document was somehow leaked, and that's where we find ourselves with the document being on in the news, questions being asked. But as treasurer, we have not had any direct request from any of the news agencies to clarify all these figures, the lack of controls, what is the status as of now. So that matter is what it is right now, Chair. Tomorrow we were supposed to present to SCOPA. That meeting has been cancelled, but as the treasurer, we are clear that that was an internal process that got leaked whilst we are implementing IFMS. Yes.
Our concern, and no doubt the main committee that's dealing with this, is was there any irregularity? Was there any corruption? Was there any violation of the PFMA? Can you answer that set of questions?
Sure.
That's what we're concerned about, mainly. As for the rest, SCOPA and appropriations can deal with
it. Chair, the audit report itself that was self-initiated by the department does not mention any fraud and corruption in the process. It only mentioned lack of controls in some areas. So there is no mention of a fraud and corruption. However, as a result of that, the audit committee, because they are an oversight body, they are not with the department, they come once in a quarter, they said to satisfy themselves, since there were some lack of controls, they have instituted a forensic investigation. And until that forensic investigation is completed with the actual outcomes, we cannot say there was fraud and corruption.
When are you going to finish this forensic investigation?
Currently, the report has been shared with the minister.
Well, they finished the investigation.
They have finished the investigation. It's just to finalize the report and see its content. I, as management, including the DG, we haven't seen it. But once it is ready to be issued, we will see it.
Fine. In that case, you will report to the Appropriations Committee, right? And can you also have press releases and so on? We're very clear, whoever it is, right, even if it's the great Madiba who did wrong, we cannot as Parliament turn a blind eye. And you in particular, more than anybody else, have to be above board. But you're also human, and you can make mistakes, but you can also have people in your large family who are corrupt, because you are demographically representative of the country as a whole. So we are very clear about that. However, the committee that deals with this matter must deal with it. You are being assailed in the public domain. I am also aware of some of the issues because I've been engaging with both parties, those who accuse you and those who defend you. So I don't want to talk about that because it's Pinky's purview. What I'm simply saying...
You said those who accuse them, who accuses them?
I've never accused anybody.
No, not members in this committee. In the public domain.
In the public, who? The Guptas?
Oh, obviously not. I mean, do I look like the sort who the Guptas will even ring?
Oh.
Yeah. I played one role, and I had the misfortune, and I don't care who quotes me on this, of having encountered them, because I had no choice. I was Minister of Communications at the time. Quote me, by the way, anybody, right? I didn't say that it's unpatriotic to attack the ANC or the government. I said, go ahead and attack. I said, unpatriotic, undermine the country. But you people say, I said, what a ridiculous thing. And up till now, they don't correct it, though I gave them a Hansard, right? These guys can do it, you can understand, because it suits them. But the Hansard shows I didn't say that. But you can quote me on that, the misfortune of meeting the Guptas when I played a particular role, twice, in the public domain. No, I'm talking about the underlings of the people who are waging this campaign, both in this country and outside. Which email now? There's no email. People bump into me because I'm walking in the streets.
Oh.
Right, and so on, if you know what I mean. And nobody, you know, what I'm saying in short is, look, we don't care whether you're National Treasury or you're the Department of Public Works, right? Or the Department of Communications when I was there. You are bound by the same values and principles and the same laws and so on, and though it belongs to appropriations, it's been raised here, all we're saying is, for your own sake, for the government's sake, for the majority party's sake, if there's nothing here, can you really wage a major campaign? Okay? No doubt one particular news media won't particularly want to interview you, but that's fine. Okay, having said that, you want to say something else on this matter, and please remember it's there. I just have to be quick.
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. I was just wondering whether DDG could tell us who did the forensic.
That's fine. That's a fair question. Who did it?
It has been done by Deloitte, one of the big four.
No confirmation. Okay, my friend, carry on about it.
Thank you, Chair. Then I will move into the operations matter that we are comfortable to respond to, and then the policy matters we will try where we think we have a view on, and then where we think it is for the politicians to respond, we will have a written response. Honorable Liz, the issue of CPO interviews, it's true that it has taken very long to conduct these interviews, but at least what is heartening now is that since the new minister arrived, he asked for all the interviews of all the vacancies. We prioritized them with the DG and thereafter all the other vacancies. It is the CPO, it is the Accountant General that have been long outstanding. According to my plan as the head of corporate services, we want to hold these interviews before the end of June. And that's what we're pushing together, the ministry to be available. As you know, there is a certain panel, you need a certain panel to conduct an interview, and it involves other ministers. So that is also sometime a challenge. But before end of June, we want to interview for the CPO. The other matter that is the social security, Honorable Gekana, I think you are right to say it has been under the radar for quite some time now, but we are still very much involved as Treasury in collaboration with social development. So maybe what we need to do is that in the next quarterly, we just have to uplift that and inform the committee where is the process. Because sometimes you get engaged in other activities, and then you don't report on others.
Just can you emphasize again, you know, who's drawing up, Sakir, that this has to be done because the two-year provision lapses, I think, on the 1st of, that's why it's the 1st of April next year, right? And the NEDLAC process needs to be expedited. We read about it in the public domain, but we're very worried. Can you note that, DDG, that it's close to that period? Thanks.
Honorable Anagom, I would respond to the CEO initiative, and obviously I take the comment that you have made in terms of the details of our response to write what we should write and not be fluffy around matters, but I'm sure you would appreciate that some of the things you better leave them to politicians. I will just stick to being. But I think those comments are taken to heart. And then, as we see it in our expo, of course, we do discuss such matters, you know, to say what are the real issues, what are the problems. The CEO initiative, you would recall that when we went to, I think it was Davos this year, January. Was it Davos? I must not mix my things. But what I can say is that after Minister Gigaba was appointed, the was an intervention to reinvigorate this process, and I am confident that the process will not fall. It is very important that we continue with it. The contingent liability came in various forms from different honorable members. I think what we need to do here is, whilst it is still fresh, when we go back to the office tomorrow, we'll be in touch with Samuel and the committee secretary, just see how best to make the report available. That is there, so it's just to see how best to make it available. The areas of the financial sector summit, I think, Chair, you have responded to Honorable Shibambo there in terms of what needs to be done. Specific date, timelines to be set, and then they come back to the committee with the outcomes of the summit. That is very clear. Mandatory rotation of auditors. Honorable Shibambo wants to know whether Treasury supports or still wants to engage. I mean, firstly, we are accountable to the Ministry of Finance. So we do support the stance taken, but we also believe that there is no harm in continuing to engage so that the outcome is what is envisaged. We don't come with unintended consequences. So that is our stance as a department. The mining charter, Chair, I think it is but I mean, issues of transformation are very important. We all agree that we do need to transform. There is no question about that. We need an inclusive, a participation in the economy. Therefore, to an extent, it is addressing part of that. But the direct question, Honorable Mania, as to how is it an enabler, you think it will be a hindrance? I think that is a matter for economics debate, you know, because there are views. The views is that one view is that transformation will assist in economic growth. You need one for the other, but I'm not getting into that discussion.
But does the Treasury support the mining charter or not? I think that is not difficult to answer. Because, like, there should be an expression of where do you stand? Like, this huge debate going on in society of whether it's a correct instrument to drive transformation and grow the economy. And you're leading in that regard. You can't go on the fence. Just give us a clear direction. What is the stance of National Treasury?
Right. Can I suggest, right? You are right to ask the question. But in fairness, you can put a question to the House, to the Minister and so on. The Minister is in China at the moment at the BRICS Summit, right? And this came late last week. From what I saw in the public domain, as you did, Treasury wants greater clarity, is what was said in the public domain, right? The Minister of Finance wants greater clarity on the implications of the mining charter. What you also know is the ANC, if the media is to be believed, also called in the Minister, and what I gather from the media is there's a meeting at 1 o'clock today. In these circumstances, Floyd, do you want to persist with your question? In other words, there'll be an opportunity in another 2-3 weeks' time, or early in August, to raise it. I mean, it's
but
like...
They can say they don't know if they support...
Oh, right, in that sense, yeah. Okay, you can say that. Okay, right.
It can be an answer. We don't know if you're going to insist on an answer.
I think it's a bit unfair. But I can't stop him from asking a question. Well, okay, and I can't tell you how to reply. But there you are.
Yeah, I think you have come to my rescue, Honorable.
I've been observing that
No, the rescue I was referring to was from Honorable Shibango, not the chair.
I just wanted to clarify, is the position then that the National Treasury are not sure whether the mining charter will in fact fast-track investment in economic growth?
That's a slightly different question, but there you are.
I would leave that question at the risk. I don't want to say something that I do not have authority on.
And allow it to be implemented.
Yes, yeah.
Sure.
So, Chair, the other question was a public protector announcement yesterday. I think, as we are all aware, we haven't had any formal report to National Treasury. We know, as you know from the news, we will await the report so that we can study it, and then we can make a decision based on that. The board of CAA, when is Tutu Mieni going? I thought there was a... I think there is a board there, so... We will leave that to the governance of boards, because you establish boards as accounting authorities so that they exercise oversight. So I would leave it at that. Any application for bailout from SAA, Ms. Honorable Liz, I am not aware of any that has reached us formally. If it comes, you would see that as part of the FLC process.
Mr. Chairman, just a bit of clarity.
I know we're running out of time, but DDG, that sort of your use of the word formally is leads me to say, is there an informal approach then?
Right, can you answer that quickly?
Okay,
he doesn't know, yeah. All right, Floyd, and then we must close up.
I want to say that there seems to be no communication between the ministry and the department, because the minister said that the Dumieni is leaving after the AGM. I'm asking, when is the Dumieni leaving? I mean, like, I'm sure you have got work in the some offices, I don't know, unless if...
No, we are in the same office as Honorable Shibamba, but you would appreciate that sometimes information trickles down at the, you know, not always at the same time. So I will only speak for what I know.
I think that's a very fair question. You see, I think Pinky...
Protected.
No, Pinky. Now, stop being facetious, right? I mean, there are certain norms and rules. You were in the legislature in the province. You know it. There are some questions that are political, and certain DGs will answer them, and certain DGs will not. The norm has been here for the chair, in consultation with the majority, to decide on that matter. So if you want to vote on it, vote. But I think the questions about the mining charter, I have my own personal views about it. I think you're in the same party, and your very party has called the minister to account. So, Pinky, if you're listening, because I'm responding to you in particular, and the next time you raise it, I'm going to rule you out of order. So, yeah. So basically, the question about the mining charter, where's Frank Jenkins? Is he here? Can you just guide us? Right. So, firstly, on the issue of the mining charter, you are fair to say you would rather the minister or deputy minister respond. And they have said what they've said in the public domain. On the question Floyd raises now, you're not giving. It's fair to say what seems to be the case is there seems to be a lack of synergy between the department and the minister. That's a fair thing to say, based on... You don't seem to know what he's saying. Also, the department doesn't seem to read the media or watch the media, because some of these answers are actually in the media. So on that one, Floyd, you're absolutely right. That's what seems to come out. It's something I'll raise with the minister directly. But what I understand the minister to have said very quickly is that the term will end in September. And I think Sifiso Buthelezi also said it, and there'll be a new, two new people in the board is what he said. One is an aviation expert and something else I can't recall. But people should read the media. It's not to buy it, it's on your press reader. okay? Or you can Google it via, if you're outside, you can also access your press reader. No, no, you can do the outside parliament. Saleh helped me to do that. He'll help you. Yeah, you can access your press reader, by the way, members, even outside parliament via a web device. Okay, having said that, I want to raise now the FICA Amendment Act. Now, you have implemented provisions of the Act which are not requiring regulation. Then there are other provisions, I gather, which require regulation that you're working on in consultation with the relevant parties. Now, can you give us more than what is in the media about your implementation program, DDG? You might think I'm niggling, but really, can I just read something that I really must raise? Rather Floyd was here. Because I'm really upset about what was supposedly said by me, and these things go in there. I want to make something clear. I have never met the Guptas in their home. I met them twice as a Minister of Communications. Once was the launch of ANN 7, and as a minister I had to go. And the second is they invited me to be interviewed shortly after that, and Atul Gupta came to receive me at the door. So I want to make that clear. Right. Not in formal public meetings. They were official meetings. As a minister, I had a misfortune playing that role to meet them. But outside of that, I've never met them, I've never been to their home, and I never will go. And also I've been to any shibi in there, right? So, obviously not. I don't need to cook them. I cook myself. No. You know, this thing is really, I've got so many SMSs and calls. But you watch the tweets that go out. Fin24, I want to speak to about it. But 702 still hasn't withdrawn that. Let's move on.
Where are we now?
Gazette at various provisions, just to give you an indication of the process in respect of those provisions that have not been signed and gazetted. Only two provisions will require implementation and operationalization after the 1st of October and by no later than 2018 in terms of the agreement. The first provision deals with the freezing of assets belonging to persons on UN Security Council resolution list. This provision requires further consultation within government, and this is ongoing in terms of upgrade of systems to be able to implement this, and those engagements are commencing shortly. The second provision relates to the prominent influential persons in the private sector doing business of a certain rand value with government. This provision comes into effect on the 2nd of October 2017, but it will be operationalized after the 2nd of October through the issuing of a notice. This provision requires some form of database or systems capability, and that process is undergoing with discussions being held with the Chief Procurement Officer on the ability to facilitate such a database capability, which is an essential part of that process. And that will happen in earnest during this near period. So then the status of the implementation process, I've discussed the first two if that's covered for the committee. The status of the implementation process, there are provisions of the FICA Act which took effect on the 13th of June as detailed in the Minister's commencement notice, and I refer you to the press statement. Following your lead, Chair, in terms of our press statement, these provisions don't require any work from National Treasury or consultation with the industry, and therefore they are in effect, will take effect on the 2nd of October 2017 as detailed in our notice and press statements. The provisions that deal with the new measures introduced by the FICA Act will require public consultation on the changes to regulations, guidance, withdrawal of exemptions, staff training, and major systems upgrade is required. All of these documentations for consultation have been released last week, including a roadmap on implementation. And if the committee does not have these documents, we will be able to provide them to you during the course. today or first thing tomorrow, I can get it to you. And in particular, I refer you to the document on the roadmap. Page 12 gives a very clear, detailed understanding of that roadmap of implementation.
Missy, right? Why don't we do this, right? You see, what we found scattered things. If you access the media, you can find it if you Google. You see your verbal summary. It's like an executive summary. Can you do that? There's no rush. Can you do it by Friday morning? Right. Give us that verbal summary and then attach all the documents. Okay. Right. Okay, Mr. Maney.
Thank you, Chair. Just a follow-up question. There's a... In the statement and in the papers, there is reference to a mysterious interdepartmental forum which is going to be established to presumably coordinate the implementation of these provisions. And what's mysterious about it is there's no provision in law for the interdepartmental forums. Given the fact that in the Amendment Act, we deleted the provisions dealing with the anti-money laundering advisory council. Could you tell us who exactly will chair that forum and who exactly will serve on that forum and what its purpose is?
Any other questions?
Yes, I'll... Just to find what authority in law does that forum have?
Mr. Chairman, just a quick one. I think the database is critical, and we talked about it a lot during the committee. So, but I was just wondering what the process was going to be, because perhaps my name will be there and it shouldn't be there, or someone, you know, what is the process to establish this?
Fine.
Okay, over to you.
First of all, we absolutely commit, committee chair, to get all of that documentation to you and an executive summary. And we will then also, in that executive summary, in a more detailed way, address the questions that have been posed to us. Just in a high level, my understanding is that the interdepartmental forum is an administrative forum rather than an authoritative forum, but we will give you a clear understanding in the response by tomorrow as to the chair, the purpose, who is sitting on that that forum, and the forum's scope. I agree to you. And the authority in law. Although if it's administrative in terms of ensuring and assisting government to implement, we will define that. As well as we do have the discussions are ongoing in terms of that database, and we agree it's a critical instrument in the implementation and the success of the process. And I will request that those who are involved directly in that process provide us with a more detailed response, and we'll get that tomorrow.
Thank you.
Okay. Look, can I make some observations? One is that you have made significant progress. From what I can see, contrary to some sweeping statements by a certain political party. Secondly, as I know it, you can set up any interdepartmental committee. The president can set up, am I right, Derek, any interministerial committee. You don't need any legal foundation for it. If you want to revive the Anti-Money Laundering Council, that's different, because you can't come to Parliament, delete that provision, and then through regulation or some other form, revive it. That's my understanding. Frank has just come in. It's not fair on him. I'll ask him the questions, and he can give us a half a page by next week. But as far as setting up interdepartmental and interministerial committees, it's done all the time. So strictly speaking, I don't think you must check it out. I'll speak to Frank outside this meeting. And you don't really. I mean, Derek, am I right? These like we set up on the IUDF. I was a chair of it. 7 deputy ministers. We called it the interdepartment. We brought the department's DGs. So that I think you know that. I don't know what you're saying, really. But look, you'll give us a reply. Frank, you can look into it. The question is, I'll offer the question to you, or Mr. Mania can write the question out, and you can look at it. But as far as I know, this happens all the time. Yeah, Mr. Mania. It happens all the time. You know that. I mean...
If it happens in the ministry body and there's no authority in law or it does,
fine. Okay, we're done. Right. Okay, fine. Thank you. For now, I think you've done good work so far. But let's see. We'll monitor you regularly. Okay, that done. Let's move over to... thank you, SARS. Right, we explained the commissioner's not here. You in charge, right? Okay, of the team.
Are you going to respond to mainly our questions? We'll quickly go...
10, 15 minutes to your quarterly report, but we're more interested in your response to our questions. The ANC is meeting at 1 o'clock. I forgot about that. So we'll meet 5 past 1 or so. But if we can't finish by 1, so be it.
Claude, you were not clear, but I did clarify. I made the group just right. ANN7 launch. No, I want to do this right. And also,